Welcome to Elite Wrestling Radio. I'm Hotshot Danny Duggan, and we are back with episode 4 of our weekly podcast series. And on this week's edition of Elite Wrestling Radio, we have Sigmund joining us later in the program, all the way from Knoxville, Tennessee. He's coming up to Canadian Wrestling's Elite to debut a part of the Masterpiece Theater Tour, February 19th through 23rd. So we're going to get a little familiar with the man making the trek up north and his background and what fans can expect to see when Sigmund debuts in Canadian Wrestling's Elite. But before we get to that, let's get to the meat and potatoes of Canadian Wrestling's Elite. This week on CWE TV, we've got a huge episode, with huge ramifications on the rankings of Canadian Wrestling's Elite, as myself, Hotshot Danny Duggan, I'm doing battle with Heavy Metal, and this will be our first encounter since the controversial finish of the Rumble to Remember, where he had that masked man assist him in eliminating the over-the-top rope to the floor, thus making Heavy Metal the winner of the Rumble to Remember and earning a title shot at Robbie Royce. Also on this program, the Man Beast Rhino is back. He was just on this past week's edition of CWE TV goring Tyler Colton out of his boots, and he's back this week to take on the rough and tough legendary Rex Roberts. These two men are going to get in there, and it's going to get hot and heavy because those two big boys can hit. So tune in to the special edition of CWE TV this Friday night, 9:30 Central Time. That's channel 30 on MTS, channel 592 on Bell Express View, and that's on NAC TV. If you aren't a subscriber to either of those satellite systems, you can stream and watch it live at nactv.ca. We're coming around the corner. The CWE 5th Anniversary Tour, the Masterpiece Theater Tour, headlined by former WWE star Chris Masters, is coming up in just a few weeks, and matches have started to be announced by the day. All five opponents have been announced for Chris Masters during his stay here in Manitoba. On the Wednesday night, he's going to head to Neepawa, Manitoba to take on Kevy Chevy. Thursday night versus Kamikaze. And in Winnipeg, this is a match I'm very much looking forward to, the Masterpiece Chris Masters versus the legendary, beautiful Bobby J to kick off our CWE anniversary here in Winnipeg. And then in Selkirk, Chris Masters going one-on-one with a hometown hero, Bring the Pain, former CWE champion Matt Fairlane. And then in Beausejour, to wrap up the Masterpiece Theater Tour, it's going to be Chris Masters wrestling the super friend, JJ Sanchez. So some top action, some top competitors in line for Chris Masters. Let's see who can break the glass ceiling and make a name for themselves at the expense of Chris Masters during his five-day stay here in Winnipeg. And some other matches have been announced, and some of those matches involve yours truly, as myself and AJ Sanchez are going to team up in Neepawa, Manitoba on February 19th for a rematch from Beausejour on the last tour against Mann. But this time, no countouts, no disqualification. The rule book is out the window. So we're gonna get down and dirty in Neepawa, Manitoba. This was a match originally scheduled to be Mann versus Thunderblood. But with Red Thunder's recent injury, he's unable to compete, and those fans of Neepawa are still getting that no countout, no disqualification match they were promised. So me and AJ Sanchez are going to go to war with Blake Broadway and Mr. Incredible in Neepawa, Manitoba. And the next night in Morden, my very tag team partner the night before, AJ Sanchez and myself will do battle. It's a friendly rivalry that's escalating a little bit over the last little while, most recently with me eliminating him from the Rumble to Remember. So we're going to get in the ring and figure out who the better man is, the only way we knew how, and that's by pinning the other man's shoulders to the mat. 1, 2, 3. And just announced earlier today, the main event of the CWE 5th Anniversary Show, and there's been some very big main events at every anniversary show, but this one may be the biggest and the most brutal. Darren the Bomb Dalton, the Tattooed Terminator, is finally getting his opportunity at the CWE Championship when he wrestles the pissed-off Pitbull Robbie Royce, who just finished celebrating 1 year as CWE Champion. These two men, their personal feud and rivalry has taken a turn and escalated to heights I never expected. And on February 21st in Winnipeg, the CWE Championship will be contested under a last-man-standings rules contest. So the man who can't answer a 10 count will be declared the loser and the winner, the new or retaining CWE champion. So it takes a lot to keep one of those men down for 3 seconds. A count of 10 is going to see a whole new level of brutality out of both of those men in pursuit of the CWE championship. Stay posted to CWECanada.ca as more matches by the day are going to be announced for what's shaping up to be the biggest tour in CWE history. Last week on the program, controversy was had when the Mecca Shea Madison returned to CWE in some sort of capacity as he was interviewed here on Elite Wrestling Radio. It was the first time we've heard from him since his departure in August of last year. And in typical Shea Madison fashion, he ruffled some feathers, he caused some heat, and he pissed some people off. So we're going to have him back on the program next week, next Wednesday night. Tune in for part two of the interview with the Mecca Shea Madison. If you have a response to anything he may have said on the program or any questions you may have, send them in. Danny@CWECanada.ca, and we'll confront Shea Madison with the hard-hitting questions next Wednesday. We're going to take a quick break, and when we're back, on the line from Knoxville, Tennessee, Sigmund. And we're back, and on the line we have a man making his Canadian Wrestling's Elite debut February 19th through 23rd, a part of the Masterpiece Theater Tour featuring Chris Masters from Knoxville, Tennessee. Welcome to the show, Sigmund.
How's it going, guys?
So, Sigmund, you're making your Canadian Wrestling debut, not just your CWE debut, a part of this five-show tour. What can fans expect out of Sigmund over those five events?
You know, you can definitely expect a true winner heading to Canada, but, you know, I'm looking forward to it. I'm always looking forward to new opportunities, new doors opening, and I've never had a door in Canada quite open, and then this one just kind of came about, and it looks like a good, solid opportunity to come up there to CWE, and you guys appear to have the best talent pretty much across the whole part of Canada there, so I think it's going to be a good time.
Have you gotten yourself familiar with the Canadian talent yet? Do you know what you're in store for?
A little bit. I've actually been, you know, checking out the YouTube, and they, I watched a big hour-long battle royal you guys had with Rhino and yourself and a few others, and trying to check it out, scope it out a little bit. But I'm going to pull it up here on my wonderful iPad over the next couple weeks and kind of scope and see what I can do and check out.
All right, so let's backtrack to the beginning of the career of Sigmund. Why did you get into professional wrestling?
Because I was stupid. you know, I grew up watching it, and when I was a little kid, you know, I always wanted to be a superhero, and that never panned out because, you know, superpowers don't really exist. And I always wanted to do something kind of cool, different, you know. And I watched wrestling, and I was always mystified by how crazy it was, and all the characters, and the hard-hitting action, and the wrestling, and how these guys were able to do it night after night after night after night, and still walk out the next day, you know. And I decided, you know, one day in high school, I was like, you know, I'm going to give this a shot, and I'm going to try it out. Started researching schools, and found one up in Boston, Massachusetts, and went up there for a week. It was Killer Kowalski school at the time, and called Chaotic Wrestling, and went up there and got beat up and bruised up and bloodied, and sent back down to Tennessee, and for some stupid reason, I loved it.
So you grew up in Knoxville, Tennessee. What are some of your memories of Tennessee wrestling?
You know, we are blessed down here with wrestling.
I'm very envious of the wrestling you got to grow up on.
Oh, it's crazy the talent that has come through Knoxville. You had when I was young, it was Smoky Mountain Wrestling, but even before that, you had Flair helping run the territory down here, and you had the Fullers and Rock and Roll Express and Tracy Smothers, Bobby Eaton. I mean, it was just talent that came through here was just ridiculous. And you know, of course, it was some of the best wrestling in the United States today. Still holds up and stands up to the test of time. So it's definitely worth checking out. Also, if you want to go back and play the history game.
Yeah, it's definitely my favorite style of professional wrestling. And when I have my choice of what I'm popping in the DVD player, it's usually something from that region. Did you attend a lot of live matches before getting into the business?
You know, when I was little first, I was a big fan of WCW, so anytime they'd come around, I'd try to check out the house shows and things like that. And then Smoky Mountain Wrestling, you know, it wasn't as big as WCW, but it was, for this area, it was revered as pretty high standard. So we'd check out that occasionally. They'd hit the small towns, and they'd put on the good shows because they were based out of Morristown, Tennessee, which is about an hour from here in Knoxville. So they ran this area a lot. And You know, I was able to check out Chris Jericho and Lance Storm, guys like that. And it was always something good coming through this area.
So you went to Boston. You came back a week later. You credit Dr. Tom Pritchard as your trainer. Where did that come to be, and what can you tell us about training with Tom Pritchard?
Yeah, Tom had just got fired from WWE at the time because he was one of their trainers. And so in the gap between when he went back to WWE, he kind of opened up a school in a town called Maynardville, Tennessee. And it was about 100 people living in the town. And Tom found a building, and it was about the size of a two-car garage with no air condition. And he thought it would be perfect for a wrestling school. And so I joined him in that endeavor and trained with him for several months every day. And he was awesome, man. Tom taught me just about everything I know as far as wrestling and the holds and how to set up a match and this, that, and other. And then later down the line, I credit psychology-wise to traveling with Ricky Morton and Bobby Eaton.
So being trained by someone like Tom Pritchard has some prestige and honor to it. Did having him as your trainer open doors for you when you started wrestling?
It did. You know, I was kind of stupid at first, though, with Tom. I kind of got the big head about things. I thought, oh, I'm being trained by Tom Pritchard. I'm being trained by the guy that trained The Rock and Edge and Christian, the Hardys, and da-da-da-da, you know. And so I was still really green and out of shape, and I kind of got the big head about it, and there were some doors that opened that I could have gone through, but I played it all wrong, truthfully, and took me a while to kind of level out and kind of truly learn the business and how it all works, the ins and outs and everything. But, you know, I credit it as a learning experience, and Tom surely has helped me over the years with a lot of things and opportunities. But right at the beginning, no, I kind of screwed myself over on a few things like that.
So you started wrestling. You're trained by Tom Pritchard. You get on the road. You're traveling with Bobby Eaton and Ricky Morton. How did those come to be, two guys you had the opportunity and pleasure to get in the car with and pick the brains of?
You know, they did a lot of independent shows through here. Bobby at the time was living in Kingsport, and Ricky Morton lives in Bristol, Tennessee, and those are close by. So they're always hitting up independents around here at the time. And so I was always on these shows with them. And at first, you know, growing up, watching them as my childhood heroes, I looked up to them really crazy, but I didn't put the pieces together at first about how much I could learn from them. But then over time, I kind of saw opportunities open up to sit with them and pick their brain on things. And we just kind of grew relationships that they were able to start traveling with me. I was driving them places and different towns, and able to work with Ricky and Bobby both several times in the ring. And it's a different experience, because you go from being a greenhorn who thinks he knows everything in the wrestling business, going out there trying to kill yourself in front of all these people, doing things that you shouldn't be doing, number one, at small shows and to your body, and then to going out there with Ricky and learning how to tell a story and truly develop as a wrestler. And it's just a crazy experience that I'm just glad I got to be a part of.
Now, we mentioned earlier the Tennessee style of professional wrestling. Is that something that is still very prevalent in 2014, or has the style in Tennessee taken a more modern-day twist?
Wrestling. We got Tennessee wrestling. You know, it is kind of – it changes. There's a lot of these guys coming through these days that they want to try to do everything they can and not so much entertain as the old school guys know how to do and used to do, and it's still prevalent. The good shows, you know, you have good Tennessee wrestling with the good characters and entertainment, and the fans going absolutely crazy and damn near causing a riot, but it's a mixture. There's a lot of, unfortunately, there's a lot of goofs around here. So I try to honestly stay out of Knoxville. I try to stay out of Tennessee.
How does that Tennessee style of wrestling adapt in other regions that you wrestle in?
You know, everywhere I go, I always try to be the guy that I stick to my roots. I mean, I like to wrestle intense and everything, but you go somewhere and you do the Tennessee style. You kind of take it at a good pace and you try to do a lot of entertaining. And it gets over. It actually does. It gets over. Everywhere I've gone so far, you stand out because you got all these guys wanting to do the strong style Ring of Honor stuff, and that's great. And for the guys who want to go out there and do that every night, that's great. Good luck being in the business a year from now. But that's wonderful and all. But when I go to a show and do my thing, and it kind of stands out because it's different. I mean, I can hang there with the Chris Heroes and the Chase Owens and the crazy hard hitting boom 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 boom. But I like to be a little bit different, stand out, and that's it helps me. I use it as an advantage.
You're someone who has definitely stood out, and you've expanded to many other regions. Something that you did do in your career earlier on was staying at the Inoki Dojo and doing some training there. What prompted that decision to go out west to California?
You know, I think it was 2006 I went out there with a friend of mine. There was a New Japan tryout. And it was bad. Like I was telling you a little bit earlier, I still had the big head. I thought, oh, I was trained by Tom Pritchard. I'm great. And I went out there, and the tryout had started. And so we got there and got in the ring. And within 20 minutes, they beat me up, blew me up, throw up, whatever. And so that tryout, within 20 minutes, just sank. It just sucked. So I came back to Tennessee, and I was like, I'm doing this all wrong. I had to get my head on straight, and I went back out there the next year. It wasn't New Japan anymore. The 01 had kind of formed a relationship with the dojo out there, and I stayed out there for 2 weeks and trained there, and it was kind of different. It was really cool. It was a good experience, and then I ended up getting to work with Masato Tanaka in a tag match, and that was a learning experience. And so it was just really fun, man. It was really fun. A lot of ups and downs, but the end result was good.
The Inoki Dojo wasn't the only Japanese camp you attended. You also attended the Pro Wrestling Noah camp twice in Missouri, a part of Harley Race's organization.
Yeah.
It's a camp I actually ended up going to in 2009, so I just missed you by a year.
I highly encourage anybody in the wrestling business, if they want to learn, Harley does that camp every fall, and it's a week long, and they have representatives from WWE up there. Harley helps out. The Noah guys come down, and they all work together, and it's great, and you make great long-lasting friendships and acquaintances, and you learn the knowledge at a camp like that is great. I was able to go 2 years in a row, 2007, 2008, like you said, and I was able to learn from Ricky Steamboat and Harley and Mike Rotundo and the Noah guys like Kenta and Morishima and get in there and actually learn a few different things of how they do it in different places, and just being able to pick up on that is great.
Actually, one of the years you did attend the Pro Wrestling Noah camp, a CWE wrestler by the name of Mentolo was down there. Do you recall bumping into him?
No, truthfully, the crew I hung out with, I'm not saying it was cliquish down there, but the crew I hung out, it was me and a guy named Sean Schultz, John Saxon, and Michael Elgin. We all kind of hung out together and did our own thing. So, but I mean, there was like 50 guys there each year, and it's hard to keep track.
So we talked about your Tennessee wrestling roots. You've expanded a little bit. You've also done some matches for Ring of Honor. How did you get an opportunity with that company?
I was able to do, I think I've worked for them about six times. And those opened up. I was friends with Nigel McGuinness, and he was able to hook me up on the first couple, and they went okay. And then I went up there and did a couple tag matches with Sean Schultz. We rode up there with Jerry Lynn, and those are fun experiences. Ring of Honor is a great company. There was great crew, great guys. Everybody's solid workers up there, and they take it very seriously. And the fans there take it very seriously, too. So that was a really cool experience to be in, and a great company and everything. But at the time, it just wasn't for me, and I found other avenues to go down.
Who are some of the people you worked with when doing those Ring of Honor matches?
We did, I don't know if you know Shane Hagedorn, did some with Shane Hagedorn, Rhett Titus, and the guy doing the lumberjack gimmick. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, Ernie Osiris or something like that. And, we did just random six mans and, one of the nights we wrestled, three ninjas, just guys dressed in black ninja gimmicks. and beat them up and did our own thing.
So you had a very interesting experience, probably a good learning experience early on in your career, as you were put into a tag team with David Young, that fans may remember from Total Nonstop Action. How did your partnership with David Young happen?
I started doing singles matches with David all over the place. I was getting booked to work David just about everywhere. And so I started traveling with him, and one day we were like, why don't we just kind of start tagging? And he didn't really have anything too much going on at the time, and we got along well on the road. So we started tagging, and he did it in TNA with Elix Skipper, and Elix had got out of the business, but we sat and we talked with Elix, and we kind of got the thing together, and we started wrestling pretty much all over. We did some good business down here in Tennessee, but we did Georgia and Florida and the Carolinas, and he's a great guy to be on the road with. He's very funny. He's a constant river, and he's just another good guy to learn from. We wrestled at a promotion called Crossfire Wrestling out of Nashville that started doing really good business for a while, and we tagged there for about 2 years, and but then Crossfire closed down, and but he's out of the business now. He's kind of doing his own thing, branching out a little bit toward maybe a comedy stand-up thing, but I still talk to him on a weekly basis.
Somebody else that's listed on your resume as somebody you trained with is Chris Michaels.
Yes.
What's your experiences with Chris Michaels?
Okay. Chris Michaels is a guy out of Nashville, and he's an awesome worker. He's actually helped work with OVW and stuff in the past, getting guys like Cena and Lesnar and everybody ready for TV. And he is a guy who is awesome to learn from because his work is fantastic, not in and not out. He doesn't care how many people are out there. He's constantly giving it 110%. And I've been fortunate enough to learn from him. I tell you, I've been blessed beyond belief from day one at the people I've been able to meet and get in the ring with and travel with and learn from. So many people have opened doors for me to learn from them and things like that. It's constantly some new experience, and I expect to come up there to Canada and do the same.
Is Chris Michaels somebody who has a badass reputation in the Tennessee area?
Badass? I don't know about badass. Solid worker, yeah. Old school, hard rock kind of guy.
The reason I ask, I actually wrestled Chris Michaels, I want to say 2004, in Nashville for Burt Prentice.
Okay, yeah.
And that was the first time I met Chris, and he was completely fine and professional with me. But I remember prior to the match, Burt Prentice pulled him aside in a room and had like a talk with him. And then Burt came back to me and he's like, Danny, don't worry. Chris is going to be nice to you. He's not going to beat you up tonight. Something I never thought was going to happen in the first place, but he planted it in my head that maybe he didn't like me, but he had to talk it down.
No. Chris is down to earth. That was probably Burt ribbing with you.
Yeah.
Burt likes to mess with the guys, so.
Yeah, we ended up having a fine match, and he was completely professional and a good guy to work with.
Yeah.
Someone listed on your notable feuds is Tracy Smothers. That's someone I'm a big fan of watching and who's legendary in the southern U.S. What are some of your match experiences with Tracy Smothers?
Tracy's great, man. He's another one of the guys that I've got to travel with over the years with, Bobby Eaton. Bobby and Ricky and Tracy are all kind of in a group together, man. And I was 2007, 2006, roughly through that time, I was able to work with these guys constantly. And Smothers is another one of them. I didn't really get to ride in a car and travel with Smothers as much as I did Bobby and Ricky, but I've got to work with Tracy. And he's constant entertainment. He's off the top. He's nuts, but he's great. He's great in the ring, and he used to be one of the best baby faces. He drew so much money around here in Knoxville and Smoky Mountain Wrestling. It's ridiculous, as one of the top baby faces. And I tell you, Tracy's out there, but he's another hard hitting guy and a very solid worker. And I've loved to get to work with him. And truthfully, I saw him the other day, and he's looking fantastic. He's in great ring shape. And he's still going 45-minute matches.
Some of the wrestling that you sent me before coming up here was a company called Traditional Championship Wrestling.
Yes.
And you sent me those matches, and I watched them, and I quite enjoyed it, and I ended up watching more and more of the product. It's a really good wrestling TV product. What can you tell Canadian fans about TCW? Because it's something I highly recommend them getting on YouTube and Googling, or sorry,
oh, yeah.
searching. It's
TCW,
great wrestling.
TCWWrestling.com is a website to go to check that out. But it's a great company owned by a guy named Matt Riviera, and he has a great attitude towards the business, very old school. He wanted to put out a different product, a product kind of really family-oriented, but old-school wrestling, you know, not so much of the entertainment type stuff, not so much of the boom, 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 strong style Ring of Honor stuff, just good old traditional wrestling. And it clicked, man, down in the, we did the market of Arkansas and Missouri, Mississippi, Oklahoma, and I've worked there for about 3 years now, and the TV product has constantly gotten better and better and better and better. And he brings in talent from all over the world, and he's constantly trying to do things to help all of his crew get better and things like that. And he's got a good product on hand, and I suggest everybody check it out. Yeah, it's very old school, very, I guess you would say southern based, southern wrestling kind of a little bit. But he's got his head on right, and he's got a good product that he's pushing all over the country on, here in the United States on a channel called the Pursuit Channel right now. He's got a lot of good things planned for it, and I think he's trying to open some more doors for us with that as we speak.
That's traditional championship wrestling. Hop on YouTube, take a look. Some great wrestling television on that product. We're going to do something we haven't done here on Elite Wrestling Radio. Actually, our producer, Kid Remington, has some questions for Sigmund. What do you got for him?
Well, first of all, the Southern wrestling fan. Okay, I read Chris Jericho's book about his time down there. He actually puts quite a bit in his book on that. He categorizes the Southern wrestling fan as somebody that's kind of caught back, you know, in the 70s, the 80s. And I'm just wondering, with wrestling changing, has that changed at all? Have the fans caught up, or are they still back old school, or is there a mixture of both?
You know, it depends on the town that you go to as to how the Southern fan really is. There's some of these towns in the hills of Tennessee and Kentucky and Virginia and places like that that you can go to, and these people will, you know, they'll walk to shows still. They'll drive four-wheelers. I don't think they even know what the internet is. And they'll pack arenas out or you know, the high schools or whatever we run. And they're crazy. They're rabid. They'll still try to come stab you after shows, the heels. They'll come after you, and the baby faces can make a ton of money at the gimmick table. They love it. They breathe it, these people. But then there's some, you know, some of the more towns, like here in Knoxville, it's kind of oversaturated, and the fans are just, they don't care anymore, and they're not as rabid, not as crazy looking, and you know, they're just a little different.
I also read in that book that Ricky Morton was the wizard at merchandise. If there was something that could be sold, or something that could have his likeness on it, he did that. Did any of that
come out on you? Still to this day, him and Robert doing the Rock and Roll Express thing, you know, they go to a town and they'll wrestle, they'll go out on intermission. And I mean, it's T-shirts, it's bandanas, it's hats, it's pictures, it's anything and everything you can absolutely think of. Armbands, watches, wrists, toys. They got the WWE stuff out now, the Legends things. They'll sell anything. Ricky Morton is one of the best people to sell in the ring and out of the ring. You know, he can entertain anybody, and he connects with the people like nobody I've ever seen. The people just absolutely eat him alive, just loving him and supporting him, and they'll do whatever. And at intermission, you try to put a table next to Ricky Morton, good luck, you're not going to make anything.
What about guys like... you know, you mentioned very briefly Jim Cornette, Tracy Smothers. What about guys like Jeff Jarrett, Bill Dundee, Jerry Lawler? Jerry Lawler, one of the few guys to, you know, down there in Memphis, retain his title in a no disqualification match by disqualification. You have to have some pretty solid following to be able to pull that off down there.
You know, Lawler, he has the Memphis area, and in Memphis, Tennessee, people think Jerry Lawler is the biggest icon in wrestling of all time. He owns Memphis and that area. And guys, you know, like Cornette, Jarrett, and all the other ones you named, everybody down here like that, the following that these guys have been able to build up over the years is crazy good. And the fans just eat them alive. They love it. They stick with them no matter what. And you know, like Lawler, he can go out there and he can pretty much do whatever he wants to, and the people are just going to, you know, buy into it no matter what. It's great. It's good for business. And I think Jarrett's even got another company or something he's about to start up. I don't know much about it yet, but he's kind of starting to get guys on board for that. So
obviously you're well versed in your wrestling history. You know, Winnipeg is known for a few guys like Chris Jericho. They're not exactly just normal average Joes. Are you ready for the crazy Winnipeg wrestling fan? Like, we've had a rich heritage of AWA back in the day, doing a lot of their TV tapings up here. That was kind of a strict style of wrestling, the Ganyas.
Yeah.
Are you ready for that?
You know, I'm ready for just about anything. I honestly can't wait to get up there. I'm burnt out a little bit down here, and I can't wait for a change of scenery, and I can't wait to go up there and produce some good quality matches.
We're going to close out the program with a segment called Ribs, Rats, and Road Stories.
Oh, God.
So you're going to tell us a story of some ribs, you're going to tell us a story of some rats, and you're going to tell us just a story on the road, a different perspective from the southern U.S.
All right. Rib-wise, man, it's constantly crazy because traveling with David, it'd be the simple ribs like it would be eating out at a restaurant, and then I'd go to the restroom, and I'd come back, and the whole table would be gone. Everybody. It just disappeared. Parking lot, nothing. No car, nothing. Just me and the tab, and trying to figure out where the hell David went to. Simple things like that. I don't really have that many rat stories, man. I keep it kind of peaceful on the road. We don't have many crazy rat endeavors down here anymore. I know back in the day it used to get kind of wild, but since corporate world WWE took over and things like that, everybody's kind of peaceful down here.
Nobody's having fun anymore.
Yeah, nobody's having fun anymore. it's kind of quiet as far as the rat department goes. I mean, there's a lot of the boys that are hung up on all these girls. The problem is the boys are hung up on all these girls, and then they go crazy about them and fall in love, and they've killed it all that mess down here. So
killing the business.
Yeah, the business is half dead anyway down here. We're trying to give it CPR and break the glass in case of emergency and get the defibrillators out and try to revive it here.
And that wraps up our edition of Elite Wrestling Radio this week with Sigmund. Sigmund, do you have any final words for Canadian wrestling fans before you make your trek up north?
I encourage every single Canadian wrestling fan to come out to every town we run the week of February the 19th through the 23rd and see what a true wrestling winner is all about.
There you have it. Sigmund coming to Canadian Wrestling's Elite, a part of the Masterpiece Theatre Tour, February 19th through 23rd. Visit our website, cwecanada.ca. for all the event information. That's going to do it for this week. Tune in next week as we sit down with Shane Madison for part 2 of Elite Wrestling Radio.